Johnson. Oh, going for the championship, that ain't coming close. This might require taking notes, homie, listen close. Serendipity when you know, you the one who chose. We going past the end zone, crushing every goal. I feel it in my enzymes, in my chromosomes. If you ain't come outside to go hard, then go back home. I'm in my zone, if it ain't greatest, I'm better left alone. This for the world, put what we speaking on speakerphone. Yeah, Wills, let them know what we be on. Serendipity, man, tune in.
What's going on, good people? Welcome to another episode of Serendipity. I'm Inky Johnson, here with my brother.
I'm Oak. How we doing today, boss?
Man, I'm all good. I'm all good. How you feeling?
Man, I'm hell when I'm well, and I got a pocket full of penicillin. Let's go.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, man. Life been teaching me, Oak.
Talk to me about these last 2 weeks.
Been teaching me, man.
Let us in on it,
brother. Life been teaching me, man. Got some insight, which we're going to dig into in the episode. We're going to pitch and catch a little bit. But we're going to start it off, man, how we usually start it off, with the quote card. It reads, "What is the meaning of life? To be happy and useful." What is the meaning of life? To be happy and useful. Talk to us, good sir.
Man, I think the most important thing in life is to help people.
Yes, sir.
Because it's really about, what are you putting out there? What energy are you putting out there? Right? What energy are you putting out into the universe? Right?
Absolutely.
And if you're putting the energy out to ensure, to your best ability, mm-hmm. that someone else's life is better, then the universe and God is going to ensure that yours is better.
I like that.
Right? We sometimes get caught up in our own self-referential selves.
Yes, sir.
And try to be like, well, I'm going for mine. Well, what you essentially doing is getting in the way of what God got planned for you. Mm. Right?
Yes, sir.
The thing is, we have free will. So our free will, we can use that to try to better ourselves, or we can use that to try to better others. If we use our free will to try to better ourselves, then wherever that leaves us, wherever that lands us, great, right? Yet, if we use our free will to try to enhance the lives of other people, then their lives are going to be enhanced, of course. Yet, the catch to this is, then now, God, the universe, is going to increase your life tenfold.
Mm, I'm picking that up.
So, because you're not getting in God's way, you're not getting in the universe way.
Mm.
It's almost like you're trying to take the river and make it go and flow north, when actually it's just going to flow south naturally, right? And what I mean by that is, when you try to do things and put yourself first, that's trying to make the river flow north.
Mm.
As opposed to the natural order of things is, I got to make sure you're good. I got to make sure the people around me are good.
Yes, sir.
And then you, in turn, try to make ensure that I'm good. The law of reciprocity. I mean, the formula is plain as grits, boss.
Mm. I'm picking it up. You know, man, I love it. It says, what is the meaning of life? To be happy and to be useful. I never forget, man, as a young man, I asked Trey Hurst one day after practice, I said, why do you live life the way that you live it? And he said, I'm going to share something with you, and I don't want you to ever forget it. And in his simplicity, it was yet profound. And all he said to me was, as long as you can live your life and make sure that somebody else's life is okay, God will always make sure that your life is okay.
Yep.
Right? Martin Luther King has a quote, right, that I love. It says, life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing to help other people? Right? Which interconnects into what you were saying. But I'll never forget, man, just asking myself the simple but potent question one day, are you happy? Right? I said, what is the meaning of life? To be happy and to be useful. Like, with what you're doing, with where you're at, with what you feel as if you're called to do, like, are you happy? Because most of the time, if we're using the gifts that God has blessed us with, right, we're happy, but also we're useful. right? With the things that God has blessed us with. Like, we're happy, but we're useful in terms of the gifts that God has bestowed upon us. And so I want you to just stop every once in a while along your journey and just ask yourself the question, man, in the midst of the work, in the midst of the grit and the grind, am I happy and am I being useful with the gifts, the talents, the skills and abilities that God has blessed me with?
I mean, you're saying the mouthful right there, Bo. Because this notion of happy, right? Happy is an emotion. Joy is a state of being.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be in the state of being of joy, right? Yet, we have to honor ourselves enough, value ourselves enough to be happy.
Right.
That's why I always say, do what you want to do. You know, do what makes you happy.
Yeah, man.
And when you can make what makes you happy, helping people, when you can marry those two things,
right,
you can't lose.
Absolutely.
Right? Definitely. You can't lose. You're going to be able, now that energy now that comes from you, people are going to want to be around you. People are going to want to feel and be able to draw off of the energy that you have. Right? Because you know people who are, they're happy, but it's a momentary happy.
Right.
It's not deeply rooted in joy.
It's
not deeply rooted in helping other people. It's fleeting, as you say, right? What makes being happy sustainable, like grounded in something, is when your happiness is in making other people's lives better or contributing to other people's lives, right? So if it's almost a paradox. Being happy is not for you. You get the result of making someone else's life better. If that's what makes you happy, then you're winning. If you have to be happy on the front end before you make someone else's life better, then that's when it's fleeting.
Picking that up, dog.
Yeah.
So I gotcha. I love it. You know, I asked myself this question because I thought I knew the answer until recently. When do you feel you're at your best? Have you ever thought about, like, when you're at your best in terms of just as a man, as a father, whatever? When do you feel like Oak is at his best?
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I was tutoring two young ladies there in the third grade, sisters. And we were tutoring mathematics. I didn't have their work.
Gotcha.
You know, the teacher hadn't given me what they were working on. So we ended up just working on concepts and the concepts of counting money. And as we were going, I was just thinking of things to do, right? I'm not going to go into what we did. You know, we just had the coins and it was so powerful to me because I didn't know what I was going to do until I was in the middle of doing it.
Mm.
But because that's my spiritual makeup,
right?
As a inspirationalist,
mm.
if I have to plan for it, then I kind of lose the excitement and the joy in doing it, right?
Yeah.
For me, it is in the moment being able to improvise, in the moment being able to pivot, being able to shift, and coming up with and understand being able to overcome that challenge.
Yeah.
So that hour that I spent with those two young ladies, I felt so good about myself.
Mm.
In fact, you know, if you know, the people that follow us on social media or whatever, afterwards, I went to another funeral, right? You know, I went to another funeral, but again, it was a natural death, whatever. You know, we get old, we transition.
Absolutely.
Cool. So the repast was a party.
Yeah.
You know, they playing the blues or whatever. Yeah, so that's why, you know, I had my hat on, I had my fedora, had my shades. But I was feeling myself.
Ready, yeah.
But I was feeling myself. What people don't know is I was feeling myself because I had just came off of this amazing tutoring session.
Gotcha.
So I feel, well, for me, I'm at my best when I'm able to be in the moment, be in the flow.
Yeah.
And just get in sync with what is going on. Right? As opposed to planning something and making sure, well, we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to do that. That's not me.
Yeah, that zaps me too. Like that plant, like, I'm not a step-by-step man.
No,
that ain't me.
No.
That'll make ink exit stage left. You ever seen when Ross got up from that interview? I know yeah. them my dudes, though, 85 South.
Yeah.
But boy, if somebody doing too much planning, oh, man, I got to go, Jack.
But the thing is to understand that that's a spiritual makeup. Because for some people, that is what drives them. You know
and
what I'm saying?
They flourish in that.
They flourish in that scenario.
Absolutely.
In fact, they'll get anxiety. Just like I get anxiety about planning.
Yeah.
And, okay, we're going to do this on Thursday.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, if we're going to do something on Thursday at 3 o'clock in the evening,
yeah.
tell me Thursday at 1:30.
Yeah.
I hate
yeah.
It does something to my insides to Which, know that we got to do something. And I got 3 days to think about it. It takes up too much space in my mind. It takes too much space in my spirit.
Mm. No, I'm with you, man.
What about you? What is it that when you know, like this is, I'm in chorus right now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Oak, I used to think I was at my best when everything was going the way that I wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if you'd have asked me in my early 20s, man, when are you at your best? I'd have said, man, when things are going the way I want it to go, when things are clicking, like when things are coming together, that's when I'm at my best. But if you ask me the same question at 38, in this season of my life, I feel as if I'm at my best when life presents me situations that I have no control over. It's almost as if it heightens my senses, empathy, compassion. Right? Joy, all of those things, it's as if when I have no control over situations and life deals me something, it feels as if I'm at my best as a man. As a father, I'm listening more, right? As a husband, sometimes I don't say nothing. I'm present, right? In terms of listening, like I feel like I'm at my best as a man when life deals me situations that I have no control over because it makes me go into my bag a lot more in terms of the things that I feel like God has instilled within me that makes me great as a man. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, like, I was thinking about this, Oak. I was like, when you young, you gung-ho, you black and white, you see life how you see it, right? And when people pose questions, like, how could things like that happen, right? Or how can somebody do something like that? Like, if a family comes from this, like, why would somebody repeat the past? Like, when you hear things like that, right? Because of how we grow up. But as you live, it's like now I understand the saying when old folks say, like, hey, man, just keep living, right? Just keep living, right? Man, life will kick your ass, man.
Square.
Like, life will hit you with some, man, like, I'm talking about, and you... Not plan for it, not expect it, or hit somebody close to you that feels as if it hit you, right? And then you start seeing, like, I remember feeling like, oh, like, when I used to hear people say, man, like, I didn't feel like getting out of the bed. I used to think to myself, like, how a person don't feel like getting out of the bed? Like, how you don't feel like getting up and living, right? That's how I used to think as a young man. When you running, life going your way until you get hit with something and you don't feel like getting out of the bed. And then it hits and it resonates differently. As you get older, you realize experiences, encounters drives perspective. How you see things, how you operate, how you live your life. Right. And it broadens you as a person. It makes you look at things different. It makes you have more compassion. Right. It makes you have more empathy. And so I used to think I was at my best when things was going my way. But, bro, I have to venture to say I'm at my best when life presents me situations that I have no control over. I really feel like that's when I'm at my best as a man.
And that's what I would categorize as that competitive spirit,
mm-hmm.
that competitive character.
Yes, sir.
Like that's what being a true competitor is.
Yeah.
Meaning I'm presented with something. I'm presented with a challenge. I enjoy wrestling with the challenge more than I enjoy overcoming the challenge.
Yes, sir. Talk about it.
So what happens is most people want to win in life. Most people want the best. They want things to go their way, as you were saying, right? And that's cool.
Yes, sir.
But to you know you're a competitor. You know you have a competitive spirit. You know that you're a winner if you enjoy the process of going through the challenge.
Talk about
more
it.
Than you enjoy the results of overcoming the challenge.
Yes, sir. I love that.
Right. People love the horse, the trophy. They love the accolades. They love the confetti. Great. Cool. But the people who, like, right after they win the trophy,
mm-hmm.
like, next.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. Like, we won 4 championships in a row in the city of Atlanta, football, right?
Yeah.
4 of them things. And right after we won, a week later, me, Coach Simp, Coach Printup, we on the phone like, okay, what are we doing next?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do different?
Yeah.
We challenging ourselves.
Absolutely.
Because the trophy was the trophy. It was like anticlimactic.
Right.
Not saying we knew we were going to win because we didn't.
Right.
Right. But the process of going through the challenge and that's why, to me, coaching is so addictive because we can plan all week and something happens.
Absolutely.
In the middle of the game. And
Absolutely.
You got to pivot. You got to shift. You got to do something. Your mind got to go into another place.
Absolutely.
That challenge is what, and you being able to wrestle with that challenge.
Absolutely.
Is when we feel like, okay, I'm for me, that's when I'm being oak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not and I've the number of times I got written up as a teacher with y'all, man.
Mm.
Because I didn't have my lesson plans.
Yeah.
Mm. Until the day of, you know, I would get up in the morning and before I would go and teach you guys or all of my other classes. I would get it together that morning.
Right.
But on Thursday, you asking me to teach, know what I'm going to teach next Wednesday?
Yeah.
Man, y'all can kick rocks on 20, 6 a.m. or p.m., whichever one you want to.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody doing that, man.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it.
Right, because it's a challenge.
Yeah, man.
And that challenge invigorates you.
Feed on it, absolutely.
Yeah.
People sometimes found it's hard to believe. But they was asking me even throughout the process of with my arm. So you knew this because of how close you were, but they used to give me like a different machine, like almost every week. They would come in the room with a different form of technology, different machine, arm, skateboards, all this different stuff, just trying to get some stuff to firing in my arm, in my hand. And as a competitor, that wasn't tough for me. Right? Like, I almost used to be like, when they'd be like, Ink, we got the arm skateboard. I was like, bet, let's go. The thing that was tough for me was when I wrote down my name with my left hand for the first time. That hit me different.
That
like,
was-
when I used to write with my right, when I saw the way I wrote with my left, that hit me in a different space, bro. Mm-hmm. Mentally, like, that changed my disposition in the room. When you go from just signing your name to looking at it, and it looks like you in the third grade and you in your junior year of college. The arm skateboard didn't faze me. The new form of technology, that didn't, because as a competitor, every single day, I'm feeding off of it. What y'all got next? Let's try it. I would get off the machine and they wouldn't see no results. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, people don't know this, man. I went 2 years. Hear me, man. I went 2 years. Every week. For 2 years, trying a different device, and the only thing they could tell me every single week was, we're going to try again next week. We ain't seeing nothing. I'm like, nothing? We ain't seeing nothing, ain't? And I'm trying to get my arm and my fingers, my hand to work. 2 years, not 2 weeks, not 2 months, 2 years. Every single week, the only thing they could tell me was, we're going to try again next week. But something on the inside of me was like, let's go, bring it.
That went to a day.
Come on, man. 2 years. So when I say to you, it ain't about the outcome, it's about the process. When we talking that process product talk, this ain't theory, Doc. This ain't theory.
Right.
This ain't a book. This real life.
Yeah.
This experience. This something that been lit. This ain't no, oh, look, what, 10,000? This ain't that. This something that you got to live, man. Like, I wouldn't even talk to you about something that ain't been lived. Like, I wouldn't even come at you like that. Yeah.
I went to, you know my struggle with my knees and stuff. I went to the doctor last week, and the orthopedic?
Yeah.
I'm going to say orthopedic, anyway. Yeah. Orthopedic, he came in, and he was trying to talk around having the knee replacement. Mm-hmm. I said, "Doc, stop. Just go on, take the knee out and do what you need to do with it." Because I'm already in my head preparing for the rehabilitation. A, because I've been through it before. You know what I'm saying? So the work and the grind is not getting the surgery. The work and the grind is going to be after the surgery. But that's what we're here for. That's what we're built for. I understand that process. You know what I'm saying? I understand and know when you're in the gym or in the weight room or in the rehabilitation by yourself and you don't know. You're scared. You're nervous. I'm just naming all the feelings I had. Like, am I going to be able to play ball again? Am I going to go to college? You know what I'm saying? So a lot of stuff happens when life hits you, it hits you. And the only thing you can do is to go anyway.
Yeah, man. Go anyway.
Right? That's the only thing you can do.
Go anyway. Yeah, but
that's what we mean when we talk about the process over the product. Go anyway. Just like when you started writing with your left hand and you saw, oh, man. But what triggered or what was inside of you was, I see now this is the challenge that I got to wrestle with. That's the exciting part. And when you begin to be able to write with your left hand the way you were able to write with your right hand, it's like, oh, okay, cool, great challenge, wonderful. Next.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Next. Yeah.
Next.
Not, ooh-wee, I wrote babies right with my left hand.
Right.
Nah, nobody cares about that. It's
right.
We on to the next now.
Absolutely.
The next challenge.
Yeah.
Because it's not overcoming the challenge, it's the joy in wrestling with the challenge.
Absolutely. That's where you become strong.
Yes.
That's where you become great.
It's your perspective of going into the storm and maneuvering and wrestling with the storm. Wrestling with the challenge.
Yes, sir.
Wrestling with the bear.
Mm.
Right? And then when you come out on the other side, of course, you made stronger, but you're also more invigorated.
Yeah.
That's living. That's when you're at your best.
That's living.
Yeah.
That's living.
Yeah.
I was watching an interview with Ray Dalio and Bill Belichick, and Ray Dalio said something. I was like, man, that's pretty dope. He said, pain plus reflection equals progress. Pain plus reflection equals progress. I know you're a big reflection guy. You know what I'm saying? Pain plus reflection equals progress.
Walk up out of here, man.
Talk about it, Doc. Pain plus reflection equals progress. I know you be on that reflection tip.
Hey, I'm telling you, man, I tell this story all the time. It's 5 days that I taught school at Coin. 5 days in a week. I probably cried 3 of those days going home.
Mm.
Whether it was from being frustrated, whether it was from being tired, whether it was just thinking about some of the plight of you guys' lives that you were living in the moment, whatever it may be. But in that reflection place, from the time I left Kirkwood to the time I got to College Park, there was a lot of tears shed, a lot of frustration, a lot of sadness, a lot of disappointment, a lot of despair, a lot of praying.
Mm.
Right? That was the reflection piece. Yet, when I woke up the next morning, I was so invigorated to go and do it again.
Because
I could have put it off or I could have suppressed the reflection part. Then I would have brought that frustration back to y'all the next day.
Absolutely.
So I wouldn't have been able to come back a new invigorated person.
Yeah.
So the reflection propelled me.
Mm.
I allowed myself to reflect so that I could get better.
Yeah.
So I could give all of my students the best of me.
Absolutely.
So if you don't reflect, then you hold it.
Mm.
And then what happens is it becomes toxic.
Yes, sir.
If you don't reflect, it begins to fester.
Mm.
It festers in your spirit. You know what I'm saying? So what you want to do is make sure that you are always reflecting so that you can get it, let it flush all the way through you, and you can come back renewed, strengthened, and revigorated. Right? So that's why reflection is so important. You must be able to take in what you've experienced, process it, and let it go. You know what I'm saying? That's just like when you eat, boom, you eat. The stuff that you need, your body keeps it. The stuff that you don't, lets it go. You restart the process all over again.
Yes, sir.
Okay? That's why reflection is so important to success. If you don't reflect, you won't be successful. You're going to end up being stagnant.
Mm.
And when you become stagnant, then you become frustrated. And when you become frustrated, right, then now you become a vicious, nasty, kind of negative person.
Yeah.
So it begins to feed on itself. So reflection is a prerequisite for positivity.
Yeah, man. I love it. I love it. I rode an airplane once when I was in high school, Oak, and I'll never forget, I was on the buddy pass. And I got on the last flight, and I was so nervous, man, because I had never flown before. And when I got to my seat, I kept getting up, going into the restroom. And the flight attendant came back. She's like, baby, you okay? I was like, I've never flown before. I'm nervous. So she's like, it's all good. Do what you got to do. And I go into the restroom, and it's a sign on the wall as I'm washing my hands. And the sign read, it's common courtesy to the person that's coming behind you. Can you wipe the sink out and leave it better than you found it? My whole life, for my family, for myself, I've always wanted to be better and improve certain conditions, situations, and environments. When I was at my high school, I wanted my high school to be looked at in a different manner. When people would speak about my high school, I wanted it to be looked at a certain way. I wanted the next time a mother and a son was in a car riding by Krim High School, I wanted the mother to say, hey, you know that cat Inky Johnson that's out in the world? He a product of that place. Prior to that, it was a lot of pain. Because people would say, man, if you want to make it, you ain't going to make it from there. Right? If you want to be something, you can't do it from there. People would tell my mother, right? I'll never forget my mom and father making certain moves that I didn't understand at the time, but it brought me pain. I just didn't understand it because I wasn't a parent. It was in my best interest, but I couldn't understand it. Right? Which in turn, it brought a level of reflection. That was the blessing in it. Right? The pain brought a level of reflection. Right? Then when I went to the University of Tennessee, then my three younger cousins behind me came and went to school. It brought progress. Right? But the situation and the foundation of it, it started off as pain, but I wanted to be better. I wanted to do something different. I didn't want what people said to come true. I wanted the environment to look at me a certain way. Because of what I wanted to accomplish for the betterment of the environment, for the places that I was a part of, and for my family. At the foundation of that, pain in its rawest form. But in turn, the pain brought a level of reflection, right? The reflection equaled progress. Because in my family, we broke generational curses that still hold true until this day. But at the foundation of it, it was pain. You can't run from it. Embrace it. There it is. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. Read that, Doc. That's it.
New beginnings are often disguised as painful endings.
That's it. Yeah.
Right?
That's it. How true is that, bro?
You just said it. You got to have the pain to activate the reflection.
Mm.
And once the reflection is activated, right? Once you reflect on the pain that you're experiencing, then the next natural recourse is to attack the challenge, to wrestle with the challenge, to wrestle with whatever is it before you. And then once you wrestle with it, the catch is, I'm saying wrestle, right? What I'm really saying is you're just about to overcome this challenge because you wrestle with it, right? You're always going to overcome your challenge once you address it. Why? Because you're taking into that challenge with you all of your ancestors, all of your forefathers, all of your belief systems. Everything that has made you great, everything that has brought you to that point is going to get you through that point. Right? The reason we don't overcome challenges is because we don't face them.
There it is.
Right?
There it is.
It's as simple as that. The reason that you don't overcome challenges because you don't face them. Mm. The reason I don't overcome a challenge is when I don't face it. Mm. Because the moment that I decide to face it, that's when it's almost like the super friends, the twins, they activate when they touch them. Boom. And then they turn into whatever. Yeah. As soon as you activate yourself to the challenge, as soon as you accept the challenge, you already won.
There it is.
It's just as simple as that.
There it is.
Right?
Yeah. There it is.
So you had in your mind, in your head, that I'm going to accept this challenge of being a product of Krim High School, that now when they say Alonzo Krim High School, they think of someone like you. Mm. Right? They think of someone like Larry Allen.
Yes, sir.
They think of someone like Shannon Anderson.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? They think of someone like Willie Anderson.
Absolutely. Right?
And Allison McGuire and all of the other wonderful, wonderful people that have come through there.
Yes, sir.
Right? So that brings me to the other point of, man, you got to write your narrative, bro. Mm.
Talk about it.
You got to write your narrative. Listen, y'all, you got to write your narrative.
Yes, sir.
One of the most hideous crimes that is committed is when we allow someone else to write our narrative. Mm. Because they're telling your story through their eyes. Mm. Mm. And there's no one that can tell your story better than you. Mm.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Write your narrative. That's what you were essentially doing when you said, I'm going to graduate from Krim High School and make Krim High School be known as, this is the place that Inky Johnson graduated from, right? Yes. You wrote, and you're in the process of writing your narrative. Yeah. That's why you have over how many ever million thousand of people that are following you. Because when you speak, you're speaking from your narrative.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
That's the genuineness of it. And every single person that is able to hear my voice, all I'm saying, write your narrative, man.
Man, oh, this just made me think about something. As I heard you talking, man, like, it just hit my spirit. Like, man, like, you think you got so much time, man. Like, you think you got so much time. You know what I'm saying? Just in life, like, one of the greatest things that happened, Oak, is my life changed September 9th. When I woke up September 10th, my perspective was totally different about the entity of life.
Yes, sir.
The sense of urgency that life gave me that next morning. Not that I woke up and I was rushing everything, but I woke up knowing that, man, shit can change pretty quick. Like, you could wake up on top of the world. You can go to sleep and wake up and the world could be on top of your ass and you could have no control over it. Right? Like, that's just how life works. And so we think as if we have time. Like, my wife just lost her grandmother, right? After battling for 4 years. We come in the house after my son's practice. Son just had a great practice. We come in the house, right? We go in the fridge to get something to drink. We grab it. As soon as I close the door, my wife falls in my arms. Grandma just passed, right? One of the first things she said was, man, I thought we had a little more time. She was with her every week. Almost every other day was with her. And still was like, man, I thought we had a little bit more time. You know what I'm saying? Like, you think you got time, man. Not that you need to rush your life, but you think you got time. Make that call, man. Like, you think you got time. Write that letter. You think you got time. Go see that person. You think you got time. Right? Stop treating things as, I told a group, I just spoke to a group. I said, man, when I say the most underrated blessing is leaving your house and making it back home every single day, people treat it like it's a cliche. Man, that's the most underrated blessing because every single day we wake up, we walk out of our front doors. We just treat life as if it's promised to us. It's not. When you do your work, put your stamp on it. Right? Every speech I give, I try to put my stamp on it. When I walk out of a room, everything I touch, I try to put my stamp on it. Right? So one day somebody say, man, that cat, if something happened to me, they're going to be like, man, I was in the room last time he spoke. Man, that cat brought it. Right? Stop acting as if you got time, man. Give everything you got to stuff, man. Wake up and try to make your dent on the world. Wake up and try to do something positive with the sacrifices that people have made for you to put you in the position that you're in. Make that call. Go see a person. Write that letter. Right? I journal every day, oh. Every single day I journal. At the end of every single day and at the beginning of every single day, I look in my journal at my handwriting for a few reasons. None more important than the conviction that it brings and the inspiration that it provides.
Yes, sir.
The conviction that it brings and the inspiration that it provides, right? It guides me, man. It makes me wake up understanding that this shit ain't promised to nobody. Get busy living. Let's go.
Simply, or not simply, the way I look at what you just said, Inky, is the way in which you can make sure, ensure that you're using and valuing your time is to always be cognizant of being where your feet are.
Yeah. Yes.
Like that's just a saying, right?
That's a
just
real
be where your feet are.
Absolutely.
Meaning the next moment is not as important as this moment. The last moment is not as important as this moment. Every this moment is the most important moment, regardless of whether you're at work, whether you're out with the fam, whether you're out with your partners, whatever it is that you're doing, wherever it is that you've decided to spend your time, make sure that you're all the way there in your mind, in your body, in your spirit. If you're not, then what you literally are doing is wasting your time.
Yes, sir.
When you're not where your feet are, you're wasting your time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It says, as Carr says, I began to realize how important it was to be an enthusiast in life. If you are interested in something, no matter what it is, go at it full speed ahead. Embrace it with both arms. Hug it, love it, and above all, become passionate about it. Lukewarm is no good. Hot is no good either. Passionate is the only thing to be. I began to realize how important it was to be an enthusiast in life. If you're interested in something, no matter what it is, go at it full speed ahead. Embrace it with both arms. Hug it, love it, and above all else, become passionate about it.
The only thing that you can be passionate about is the thing that you're vulnerable about.
Mm. Talk about
it. Allow yourself to be vulnerable enough to be passionate.
Yeah.
Lukewarm means, oh, I got one toe in, I got two toes in, I got one foot in, right?
Yeah.
When we're vulnerable enough to go in with both feet,
yeah,
then our passion, then it just exudes what it is that we're trying to and want to experience.
Yes, sir.
It's like you in a relationship or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like you trying to go to the NFL, but you don't want to practice when no one else is practicing. You want to go to the NBA. You want to become a doctor, but you're not doing the work outside of what everyone else is doing, right? Because you feel like, well, it may not turn out the way I want it to turn out.
Mm.
No, sir. Vulnerability comes before your passion. And then once your passion is activated, then that's when your power becomes manifested, if you will. So your vulnerability, you must first be vulnerable enough to give everything that you have to something.
Yeah.
That's when then you become passionate about it. See, we this is how, like you say, when we're passionate about something and then once the feeling of euphoria leaves, we'll leave it because we were passionate before we were vulnerable.
Mm.
I'm going to be vulnerable with this. That is going to allow me to do it even when I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Even when I don't see what the end is going to be, even when I don't think it's going to work, I'm still going to throw my heart into it.
Yeah.
Then once you throw your heart into it, that's your passion. And once you give your passion to something, that's when the power of what you're doing is manifested.
Love it. I love it. It's an interesting word choice, Oak. I love that you use vulnerability right? Because you don't hear that a lot. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's powerful because you don't see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talk about being vulnerable, you're open, right? And oftentimes people are scared to be vulnerable because you have to be open. You know what I'm saying? But that's powerful. I'm picking that up, man. Yeah.
CeeLo said that they, you know, put the gates up to keep us in or to keep the crime out.
Yeah.
Right? More times than not, you put up the gates to keep yourself in.
Yes, sir.
Right? Meaning you're not allowing yourself to go out and experience and understand and be able to receive all of what the world has for you.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to what we're thinking is we put up the gates to keep people out because I'm going to protect my heart. I'm going to protect myself. If you covered in the blood, what you need protection for? If
talk
you covered
about
in the
it.
Blood, what you need protection
about
for?
Talk about it.
Like for real. If you understand that you covered in the blood, you don't need protection.
Mm.
That's already there. What you need to do is get your butt out and allow the universe to deal inside of you, allow yourself to go out and do whatever it is that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that you're passionate about.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But we just do it in the opposite way. We get passionate about something, and then as soon as it doesn't go our way, then we put it down.
Yeah.
Because we didn't start with vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Because you're going to get hurt. It's going to be pain.
Yeah.
It's not going to be cute. Whatever it is that you're doing, it's not going to be cute. It's not going to feel good all the time. That's why we start with vulnerability, which produces the passion, where it ends up manifesting in the power.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we're going to land the plane with this word, man. We're going to land the plane with the word called belief. Belief. I would often say to them, Oak, I had to put my belief on trial, right? And they would always say, like, what that mean, man? You had to put your belief on trial. When I find myself in uncharted territory, when I find myself in an unfamiliar place, when I find myself experiencing things that I've never experienced before, the first thing I do is I go outside of my comfort zone. Whereas most people, when they find themselves in uncharted territory, they retreat to their comfort zone. I go outside of my comfort zone because I feel as if I go outside of my comfort zone, it's going to force me to do things in terms of my faith, in terms of my belief, in terms of my hope that I've never had to do before. It's going to fortify my faith. It's going to fortify my belief. It's going to fortify my hope. Like all of these things, when I'm placed outside of my comfort zone, it's like when you up there and you let go of the safety net, right? It's one thing when you watch them cats and they tight roping and they doing their thing and they got that hook and they know if they fall, they going to get caught and they all good or something down below them that they can fall to. You like, oh, that's cute. That's dope. Look at my man.
Yeah.
He doing his thing. But that cat, that boy, that guy that's up there and it ain't nothing. Oh, my man on a totally different level in terms of his faith, in terms of his prayer, in terms of his training, in terms of his belief, right? The next time you find yourself in uncharted territory, the next time you find yourself getting challenged by life, I challenge you. Don't retreat back to your comfort zone. Put your belief system outside of your comfort zone and see where it takes you. Talk to us about belief, Doctor.
I simply believe that when you can make your belief make sense of your present situation and circumstance, then that's when you begin to walk in your faith.
Talk about
meaning
it.
You're stepping outside of your comfort zone, but when you're outside of your comfort zone, you're taking your belief, which is your foundation of everything that you know about yourself, everything that you know about the world.
Yes, sir.
When you take that belief and apply it to this unknown, this uncharted waters.
Yes, sir.
Right? So when you can marry those two, then now that new situation and circumstance that you find yourself in now becomes your belief.
Mm, that's good.
Right? I believe I am a good football player.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then you leave high school and then you go to college. So you're in a new situation, a new circumstance. So you have to bring with you all of the fundamental trainings, everything that you had, all of the experiences that you had from high school, to this new place of college football.
Yes, sir.
Or this new place or this new job.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
All of your previous experiences. So you, when you can make your belief marry your new situation and circumstances and they become one, now that becomes your new belief.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I love it. I'm picking it up, man. Nothing else to be said. Put your stamp on it, baby. We appreciate your time. Appreciate your support. Peace. Serendipity, man. Tune in.